lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Do you remember, Mike, the bet that I had made with one of our mutual Twitter associates, Miss Jacqueline?
Yes, I do.
So the deal was that she's a Riders fan, and obviously I'm a Ticats fan, so...
No.
Yeah, I know, right? So, yeah. I know. News of the week. I like the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So anyway, the deal was that the fan of the losing team would have to come up with a list of 10 things that they liked about the winning team. So we will get into Hamilton's big victory over Saskatchewan a little bit later. However, she sent me an email last night. So here it goes. She says... a bet is a bet, and I'm a woman of my word. Here's the 10 things I like most about your Ticats. Number 1, they won Tackle Hunger last year. Mm-hmm. Number 2, in my opinion, the best signature jerseys in the league. And I love that their current jerseys still really closely resemble the ones from the 1970s. Number 3, Chuck Ealy, need I say more, and Tony Gabriel. Number 4, they beat the Bills. Number 5, the partnership program with the McMaster Kids Hospital. I think it started last summer, Hearts in Huddles, I think it's called. Number 6, they're one of the better teams to follow on Twitter. Number 7, one of the few teams whose fans are generally good people. I've never had a bad experience with them. Caveat, she has yet to meet me, so we'll see how she feels when we finally get to be face-to-face. Number 8, Iverwind Stadium was the first CFL stadium I ever went to outside of Ottawa, and even though it was old and falling apart, the atmosphere and culture in that place was incredible. Number 9, Brandon Banks is just amazing to watch. You almost can't help but to jump up when he gets going. And number 10, the Box J Boys, probably the best and most well-known group of fans in the league. So, not a bad list. It's always nice to hear some nice things about the team you cheer for.
Absolutely.
But that wasn't the end of her email. She went to the game in Regina. She's from Ottawa, and she flew out to Regina for the game. And so she has a little story she'd like to share with us, and I think it's worth listening to. I hope everyone enjoys this. So here we go. By a very happy accident, I ended up staying at the same hotel as the Tiger Cats last weekend. As much as I'm first and foremost always a Riders fan, I have to say that the Ticats players and coaches played a big role in making my weekend as much fun as it was. Sunday morning before the game, I was having breakfast when some of the boys came in. I chatted with Justin Hickman a bit. Even though I mentioned being a Riders fan, he still invited me to find him and the team after the game for drinks and to continue our chat. He, Courtney Steven, and Donald Washington even took the time to take a picture with me. Later, after the game, I rode up the elevator with some of the guys and they made jokes about, "Hey guys, we have a chick in here," because of my John Chick jersey. No chirping, no mention of my team having lost, just fun and laughter. I told them that they played well and that I truly enjoyed the game. At the bar, I was having a snack and a beer when someone I didn't recognize walked in. I knew he was with the team, but I had no clue who he was. He introduced himself as Marcelo Simmons, assistant on special teams and defense. We talked for a bit about the Red Blacks, the day's game, and him being from Texas. When he was done, he said goodbye and went to pay his bill and left. 5 minutes after, when I asked for my own bill, my waiter told me that Marcelo had paid it, and I never got the chance to say thank you. So, if anyone listening to this can thank him for me, please do. Oh, and at the request of Josh, this is where I come in from earlier today, I went and told CJ Gable that Josh loves him. I had mentioned to her that I love CJ Gable. I was tweeting that out almost constantly throughout the game, so I said when she said that CJ Gable was in the bar with her, I said, "Go tell him I love him." And apparently she did. Apparently they also had a good hearty laugh at my expense when CJ asked, "What's your friend's name?" And she gave him a man's name, and they all just apparently burst out laughing. So that's pretty funny. And she also got a picture taken with Gable as well.
Nice.
And to end it off, in the lobby, I ran into the one and only Corey Grant. He spent close to an hour with me talking about growing up in Stony Creek, getting drafted by Hamilton, playing with the Riders and being on the 07 Grey Cup team, and now working as a running back coach with the Ticats. It was a great end to my night, and the guys all helped to make the loss yesterday. She sent this on Monday, so the loss on Sunday, a bit easier to bear. So congrats on the win, and props to the Ticat organization for being fun, classy, respectful, generous, and accepting of an opposing fan. See you all in Hamilton in November. So that's a pretty good story as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I would like to meet the people that you met.
Yeah, same here. Like, you know, you get to meet guys when you live here. They do those meet and greets and all that sort of stuff before the season. But that's what she got to experience there was, like, genuine – like interaction outside of the football world, and that's pretty cool. That's those are the type of memories that help make fans and everything. So good on her. And as you heard, she will be heading to Hamilton in November She's coming in for the Red Blacks Ticats game, so hopefully we're going to meet up, and I'm going to show her a good time around Hamilton.
You're going to the game in Ottawa too, aren't you?
I am going to the game in Ottawa, so hopefully she'll return the favor and shuffle me around and show me some of the sights in Ottawa that maybe as a tourist I don't get a chance to see all that often.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so with that out of the way, usually we talk about CFL news, but you and I kind of figured there wasn't really much news to talk about, so let's just hop right into the games. How about it?
Let's do it.
So Ottawa with the huge comeback win over the Stamps. What did you sort of like and dislike about that one?
Well, I thought it was a great game. I thought the doubleheader on Friday had two great games, both very enjoyable to watch. You know, early on, Burris had a bunch of overthrows when he was going for the long bomb, and there was some drops from the receivers, too. You know, Williams had some drops.
Price had a couple of really bad ones.
Mo Price, I don't know what's going on with him this year, but he's dropped, like, it seems like a couple balls each game, but he needs to be better. But, yeah, but Williams really stepped it up in the second half, obviously. We were talking about it last week, you know, when he hasn't been impressing us like a bunch, but this seemed to be his breakout game.
Yeah, you were waiting for the big play with Chris Williams, yeah, you know, yeah. And sweet move on the defensive back. I think it was Buddy Jackson that he beat. Jackson tries to hold him up, doesn't matter. Burst with the bomb, Williams with the catch, and as soon as he caught it, he was gone. Like they weren't catching him.
Yeah, it was. He's not a very popular character in Hamilton, but it was a beautiful play, and it was nice to see him, really step up. I thought that, you know, when the receivers were dropping balls, I really thought Ellingson stepped up for the team, made a couple of really big catches and said, you know, if you guys are going to keep dropping the ball, I'm going to make some plays.
Yeah, again, another former Ticat playing well for Ottawa. The one thing that stuck out to me, and it has nothing to do with the play on the field, was that call on the two-point conversion.
Oh, I didn't know what was going on with that. That was silly.
Yeah, so the CFL tweeted, like, we had the explanation. They didn't explain it at all during the game. It happened near the end of the first half. And there was no explanation. Everyone was kind of lost. We didn't know what was going on. I had, wondered maybe if it was similar to in the NFL, if a player fumbles the ball into the end zone, he's the only one that's allowed to recover it. It's the old rule based on the holy roller play from the Oakland Raiders back in like the 70s. They purposefully fumbled it into the end zone and it bounced around and the Raiders got it and they won the game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So the NFL sort of changed the rules saying, okay, if that happens again, the only player that can recover it in the end zone is the fumbling player, and then if anyone else, say someone from the fumbling team recovers, it just goes back to the spot where the ball was fumbled and they just replay the down. So I thought maybe that was what was going on, but the CFL tweeted out an explanation during halftime, and I have it here. It says it was the correct call. The ball is dead when ruled a touchdown, not an immediate recovery on the fumble. So upon review, the ball goes back to the point of the fumble, which was short of the end zone. Therefore, convert no good. That's a lame excuse as far as I'm concerned, because essentially what you're saying is Ottawa was hosed out of 2 points because the referee blew a call.
Yeah. And don't they, like, review fumbles that are, you know, the whistle blows and, like, there's immediate recovery? Don't they allow that?
They do. And I understand, like, there wasn't an immediate recovery, but at the same time, there was a clear recovery. Like,
yeah,
the ball bounces around for maybe like less than like 3 seconds before Greg Ellingson, I believe, hops on it in the end zone. I don't understand how, like, it was clear who got the ball after. Like, I didn't hear a whistle, so the players kept playing. The ball was, it just seems like a lame excuse. And I know, honestly, it didn't really mean much because Ottawa won the game anyway, but imagine if something like that were to happen with 30 seconds left in the Grey Cup, and you could essentially then say that if it's your team and they lose because of it, that the refs cost you the game. Like, we can't have this. I don't know how to fix it, but like the ref just blew that call. Like, I was watching it live, and there, I was like, oh, it's a fumble, and they called it. I was like, how do you – he was nowhere – like, he was a good half yard to three-quarters of a yard outside of the end zone when the ball – like, it was obvious that it was a fumble.
Yeah. I really thought that that 2 points was going to cost Ottawa, but it'd be nice if we could – you know, it probably doesn't happen, like, in a – you know, it only happens in a blue moon, like, every once in a while. Or not even at all, really. Like, I don't remember this ever happening before. But you're right. If it happened in a more important game or late in the game, it could cost a team. So it'd be nice if we could fix that rule, and you know, because it should have counted. So
yeah, I agree. So let's put that controversy to bed. What's up with Calgary? Like, they seem out of sorts, and now they're gonna miss John Cornish for up to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Bo Levi Mitchell does not look like the best quarterback in the CFL as he was anointed at the beginning of the season. What's going on there?
I don't know. They just don't look the same. I mean, yeah, Mitchell had okay numbers. He was 23 of 41, 318 yards, but the offense doesn't look impressive to me. It doesn't look like I'm not scared of Calgary right now. If Hamilton were to play them next week, I'd respect them. Like, I know that they're a good team, but they're not scaring me right now.
Well, think about this. This is what I was thinking about. We'll get into the Ticats and the Riders game, but watching CJ Gable this week, who we are both going to gush over in a few minutes, if the Cats had him against Calgary, because remember it was the controversial. They went for a 30-yard, you know, out pattern, mm-hmm. with, you know, 75 seconds left in the game or whatever the hell it was. And there was like, well, just run the ball. If they had Gable in that situation, they run the ball and they win that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Calgary has just not looked impressive at all offensively, with maybe the exception of Eric Rogers.
Yeah.
Eric Rogers looks like a star, and I think we talked about him last week, and I said how I, at the beginning of the season, someone asked about players who we thought might not live up to expectations, and I picked him, and I admitted I was wrong, and I'll admit it again, I was wrong. He just continues to impress every week, and he's really the only guy in that Calgary offense that is week in, week out, you know, bringing his A game.
Yeah, he's a stud. He, you know, Fuller had a really good game against Hamilton, and then he got nicked up, and he hasn't had a big game since. So, yeah, Rogers seems to be the go-to guy in that offense, because Cornish hasn't been lighting it up either. So, I think... like, he's the only guy that's shining right now.
And sooner or later, teams are going to just key in on him and make Calgary beat them with someone else. And like you said, like McDaniel, Mark McDaniel's a good player, and Jeff Fuller's a good player, but you're right, outside of sort of that big game against Hamilton, he's kind of disappeared.
Yeah, but I think with Cornish out, I have a lot of confidence in Matt Walter as the backup. I think he's a solid running back. Yeah, every time he touches the ball, he seems to get good yardage. So I think if he was on another team, he might be a starting running back.
Yeah, I'm not going to take anything away from him. I think he's a good player too. My only concern there is he's not John Cornish, and therefore teams don't have to respect him as much, at least not until he starts busting off, you know, 40-yard runs and, you know, picking up, you know, 80, 90, 100 yards a game. But I don't think they'll be terrible with and terrible is not even the right word to use. There's going to be a drop-off because of how good Cornish actually is. And but it's not going to be a huge drop-off because, like you said, I think he's a good player. So I just worry that teams are no longer going to really have to respect the run. And, you know, with the way Mitchell's been playing so far this season, I don't know if they can win with the pass.
Yeah. It should be interesting to see how it goes without Cornish.
Yeah. Charleston Hughes, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Calgary's defense has been playing pretty well. I know they gave up almost 30 to Ottawa, but Charleston Hughes had a huge game this week.
Yeah, he's been top-notch the whole season.
Yeah, really coming back off that injury last year.
Yeah.
Anything else stick out to you from this game?
You know, Alvarado had that late miss in the game. I think it was from like 32 yards. And I thought, oh boy, you know, that could really cost him. But then he got the chance to redeem himself in overtime, so that was nice to see.
Yeah, that was it was one of those things where it was almost like storybook type.
Yeah,
you know, he misses that. I believe it was an extra point, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure he had a missed extra point, and you know, you end up with a tie game and you miss an extra point. You're like, oh man, if he would have hit that, they would have won the ball game. But Yeah, he had a good that big kick there. You know, doesn't come more clutch than that. You gotta, if you want to be a kicker in this league, you gotta, you know, make the kicks when they count.
Yeah, it's you know, probably the biggest win in the Red Blacks' history. You know, their short history. So
I would agree with that because it, you know, gets them to the 3-win mark, which they didn't reach last year, and yeah. You know, kind of silenced a bunch of the critics they had after, you know, dropping those two to Edmonton.
Yeah, and beating the defending champs, so good on them.
Yeah, good on them. Shall we move on to the low light, as far as I'm concerned, of the weekend?
We shall.
Which was, how the hell does BC at home give up a 21-point lead to the Argos? We both hate Toronto on the field because, like, Argos suck. That's just, you know, it's nature's way. It's just, that's how it, God's law sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But, you know, I guess the turning point had to be that third down gamble by Tedford. And it sort of seemed to, that, you know, flip momentum towards the Argos way. And they just kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away. And, you know, next thing you know, they leave BC place with a victory, and now they're sitting at 3-1.
Yeah, it was an interesting call, 3rd and 4, I believe it was. I didn't hate the call. I would like to see more coaches do that more often, you know, go for it on 3rd down, even if it's 3 or 4 yards. But, yeah, it kind of bit them on the ass there. It was really the story of two halves in that game, you know, with first half, Lule and Harris come out on fire. You know, Harris has 3 touchdowns. In less than 2 quarters, and Lule's, you know, seemed to be hitting everyone he was passing to.
Yeah, it seems like he's really, those two guys, ever since you came on the show and said, you know what, those two guys are slightly overrated, it's almost been like they heard that and they're just kind of like, they want to stick it to you.
Yeah, I know, I was going to come on and say, I was, you know, I can admit when I'm wrong. I'm wrong quite a bit, but... And I was feeling a little stupid in the first half there. They just looked amazing. But then the second half came, and they both disappeared, did they not?
Yeah, pretty much. To be honest, I was dozing in and out during the second half watching the game. So I didn't catch a lot of it. But, yeah, there seemed to be sort of, as soon as, you know, the whistle blew at halftime, it just seemed like BC was not the same team that they were in the first half. Like, you're right. Like, it must have been those first 3 touchdowns came in like the first like 20 minutes of the game, and it was just like bang, bang, bang. And you're thinking, okay, these guys are going to run all over them. And then I don't know. I don't want to, like you said, you didn't have a problem with the call. I didn't entirely. I do like when coaches gamble as well. However, I think in that situation, I believe at the time they're up 21-10. I think you got to punt it and try to pin the Argos deep and make them go the whole field. And maybe this is, you know, hindsight being 20/20, but it did seem to be like that was the sort of, that was the turning point, that stop, which, to be fair, like, Lule got the pass off and it hit Emmanuel Arsenal right in the hands. Mm-hmm. He just dropped it. So, like, it was a playable ball. It was a catchable ball. It was a makeable conversion. You know, sometimes players got to make those plays, and it's not entirely on the coaching staff. You know, he made a call. He trusted his offense, and they let him down. That's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, if he would have made it, then he's brilliant, right?
So exactly. One player that's really impressed me is AC Leonard.
He's got
3 touchdowns in his last 2 games, and like he's a big body, almost like a tight end. Like, he looks like one of those like NFL tight ends, and he's just been amazing.
Yeah, he was. I think he had 3 catches early on, and then he kind of disappeared too. But his first couple games have been. Well, his first game was last week. He had a couple touchdowns, and so he looks to be a force going forward. You're right; like he's got the speed. He's a big dude. He seems to catch everything that's tossed his way. So I picked him up on my fantasy team. So I'm hoping he has a big year.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, especially after a couple of 1-point losses you've had the last 2 weeks.
2 1-point losses in a row.
I just want to say that I still sit at undefeated after laying waste to my opponent this week. So 5-0 for the York University attendees. So,
wow!
Yeah, we're going on a run. We're gonna try to do what no team in the CFL has ever accomplished, and let's go undefeated.
Oh boy!
It's not gonna happen. I'm gonna lose this week because I have no running backs. But anyway. enough of our fantasy. Let's. What else did you like about the Argos Lions game?
Get back to reality.
Yeah. Let's.
Okay. What do we got? Trevor Harris looked shaky in the first half, throwing two picks. He didn't look right, you know. And then the second half comes, and he lights it up. I mean, he was 30 of 40 for 340 yards, and yeah, he had two interceptions. But after that, he throws two TDs, and he completed completed passes to eight different receivers. So he's spreading the ball around great.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of, not in style of play, but in sort of his cardiac kid type play of Zach Caleros when he came in for Ricky Ray a few years ago. It just seems like no matter how poorly Harris plays in, say, the first quarter or the first half, he's just finding a way to get it done in crunch time. Like, the Argos are going to have quite the decision on their hands when Ray's back and healthy, apparently now looking at around Labor Day.
Yeah. It should be interesting to see what they do. I mean, it looks like they have a pretty good team over there in Toronto.
Yeah, which, like, let's be honest, that surprised everyone. Like,
yeah, it did.
We both had them pegged as last in the East. So, like, this is not to be expected. It's a testament to their coaching staff. And as much as I dislike the guy, it's a testament to the ability of Jim Barker to find guys that we have no idea who they are and to turn them into players. Like that receiving core, with, you know, those three newcomers is just, they're making plays.
Yep. Elliott, Gurley, and Hazleton. I mean, who are those guys? And they just seem to be, you know, they look like veterans out there.
Yeah. It seems like every week, one of them, if not, you know, all of them are stepping up and making big plays. And we're going to get into the Argos a little later when we do our preview of the Ticats and Argos game coming up. But yeah, those guys they're dangerous.
Yep. So yeah, two great games on Friday night. I enjoyed them both a lot.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed with myself for not being able to stay up on I'm surprised you did because it was later out there for you than it was for me. But the eyes just couldn't stay open for that game. But I did catch most of it. But you're right, that was two excellent football games.
Yeah. You want to move on to Edmonton?
Yeah, the exact opposite of an excellent football game because. Yeah. When the game was close, it was a sloppy mess. And I guess the weather was pretty rainy out there in Edmonton, so I guess that had something to do with it. And then once Drew Willey got hurt, once again, the Bombers just fall apart, and Edmonton just, like, they just steamrolled them.
Yeah. You know, if they don't have Willey in there, they're in trouble. I mean, Brom isn't the answer.
Well, you know what? Let's just be blunt. Brom is terrible.
Yeah, garbage.
He's I don't know how many games he's played for Winnipeg or professionally, but I saw a stat that says he played a few games for the Bills when he was in the NFL. So however many times he's seen the field, he has yet to throw a touchdown pass in his professional career, and he's had more than enough opportunities in Winnipeg to show that he can be the backup. And you know, the backup QB, or at least in Winnipeg's case, the third-string QB, Robert Marv, you know, they're always the most popular guy on the team until they finally get a chance to play. But at some point, you know, O'Shea and that staff have got to be less stubborn and just, you know, don't do it just because the fans are calling for it. But look at the play on the field. Like, Brom's just not good enough, period. Yeah.
Do it because it's the right choice. You know, it's the right choice. You know, give the kid a chance.
Yeah, and, like, the opposite of that is James Franklin, like Matt Nichols. You know, Edmonton was winning, but you know, Chris Jones made the decision to pull Nichols because he wasn't playing that great. And in comes James Franklin, who, you know, he's a rookie and he didn't look like I watched like him a little bit more closely because I'd heard a lot of good things about him from Eskimo fans out of training camp. And he did look like there was some footwork issues and his mechanics weren't spectacular, but kid threw three touchdown passes in his first CFL action, so like there's not really much you can critique about the guy.
Yeah, he got it done when Nichols, you know, I guess he came in and stopped raining, but you know, Nichols has had his chances to look good and he just hasn't. He hasn't proved that he can be a starter. So, you know, it should be interesting to see if they go with Nichols or Franklin next week against the Riders, you know, if they can If it was my decision, I'd probably give Franklin a go at starter.
That would be my decision, too. And just yesterday, I saw Chris Jones had said that it's going to be Nichols. Nichols is going to start, but that if there's problems, that Franklin will be inserted into the lineup. So I think, you know, Mike Riley's still a couple months away from being back. I think sooner rather than later, you're going to see James Franklin start for the Edmonton Eskimos.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And you already put that doubt in Nichols' head that it's like, okay, you're our starter, but...
Yeah, like if you got a short leash on you, so if you mess up, we're going to give you the yank, you know?
Yeah, you might as well just give him the yank now, let him watch from the side. Maybe, you know, give Franklin a chance against Saskatchewan. Like, let's be honest, it's like Saskatchewan's not very good, so that defense is ripe for the picking. Maybe this, you know, or maybe maybe Jones is thinking the opposite, and it's like, you know, Saskatchewan's defense isn't very good. Maybe this is the game that can get Nichols' confidence back, because he just hasn't looked good. Like you said, he just hasn't looked like a starter since he's been in for Riley.
Yeah. And
he's looked better than Braum, mind you, but I think you would look better than Brian Braum.
Yeah, I could go in there and maybe not. But you know, I just want to talk about Shakir Bell's like amazing 70-yard run.
Yeah.
He almost... You know, he looks like he's tackled in the backfield. He squirms away and just gets on his horse and gallops. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I slurped him last week, so everyone knows how I feel about Shakir Bell.
Yeah. But other than that, like, not much to talk about. You know, Edmonton's first in the West now, so that's interesting for sure. I think they're going to, you know, they're doing it without... a high-powered offense, so their defense is playing great.
Yeah, and exactly, the defense, just wow. I saw a stat this week that they have not given up a touchdown at home since week 12 of last year.
Wow.
And I know we shouldn't look ahead, but Hamilton has this run of home games over the next little while. Their one road game is in Edmonton in about 4 weeks, so... Hopefully the Ticats can snap that streak.
Oh, they will.
That's impressive, though. Like, it hasn't got a lot of publicity, but that is impressive.
Yeah, that's it's a solid defense right there that Chris Jones is running.
Yeah. So before we move on to getting all giddy and excited about the Ticats win over Saskatchewan, I want to talk a bit about penalties. You remember at the beginning of the season, everyone was, you know, freaking out. Penalties.
Mm-hmm.
They've pretty much gone down every week since the opening of the season.
Yeah, they have. They're going down. Yeah, they're still not at the level that I like them at, but they're starting to go down.
No, I got the numbers here. We had 30, an average of 30 a game in week 1, 28 in week 2, 27.5 in week 3, 23 in week 4, and 24.5 this week. So this is also the second straight week that every game had under 30 penalties. So, you know... I understand everyone's, you know, wants the penalties to come down and all that stuff, but it does seem to be that maybe the refs are allowing a little bit more, and maybe, you know, the big part is maybe the players are learning what they can and can't get away with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the refs do make some mistakes, but, you know, they get graded on each game, and they have to make the calls when they see them. So, you know, they're not going to hold back if they see a penalty. They have to throw the flag.
Mm-hmm. I put most of this on the players. The players have to know the rules. I know people want to blame the refs for everything. And, yeah, sometimes there's, you know, terrible calls, or sometimes you don't like the call that's being made. But at the end of the day, it's the players that have to figure things out. And they're the ones that have to correct themselves because, like you said, the refs get graded. But, yeah, I'll go 95% on the players and 5% on the refs.
Okay.
And even that might be too high on the refs, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just trying to, you know, they're just trying to do their jobs. So I know they get a lot of grief, but, and sometimes it's warranted, but, you know, I don't think they've been the problem this year with all the penalties.
No, completely agree there. So let's move on to the happy, happy, joy, joy of the show. How about that?
Yeah.
Oh, you hear that, everyone? That's the sound of his hands rubbing together.
Yes.
This was a big win, man. This was a big win. I had done a little bit of research, and literally a little bit, because it didn't take much. The Ticats had been outscored in Regina. I have the numbers somewhere. I've lost them, so I'm terrible. But it was something like 113-33 in the three games they played there against Saskatchewan under Kent Austin. So to get this win was just, I was nervous going into the game, and I admitted that because, you know, Saskatchewan was 0-4, they were 0-3 at home. This is a place Ticats don't play very well. This is one of those games that the Ticats traditionally lose because it's a game they should win. And lo and behold, that, you know, they come up with a victory.
Yeah, the obvious thing is Gable, you know.
I love CJ Gable.
Yes, he does. You know, what a difference he makes. And, you know, it seemed like they had no confidence in running the ball when Gable wasn't in there. And then all of a sudden they seemed to be, they looked like a rush first team, you know, 20 carries, 135 yards on the ground. So, you know, with him in the backfield, it makes a huge difference for the Ticats.
He just does everything well.
Yeah.
He can run the ball. He can catch the ball. They isolated him on a block that he put on Alex Hall, which was just a beauty. It looked like Alex Hall's head snapped back, and
yeah,
like he makes that team, that offense is just better with him back there. He's a threat all across the field. He makes defenses respect the run, which opens up the passing game, which allows guys like Andy Fantuz, who had a quiet, you know, most of the game until seemed to matter the most, and then he just kept finding open spots in the zone, and that's all because of Gable back there, where teams cannot afford to go, okay, well, you know, we'll rush three or four and just put everyone back in pass defense, and they'll have to beat us with the throw, because Claris is going to have to throw it 40, 45 times a game. They don't have that. When Gable's in there, this is a multifaceted, you know, multi-dimensional offense, and as long as he stays healthy, this offense is going to be tough to stop.
Yeah, you know, 6.8 yards rushing, that's a great average. He only had three catches out of the backfield, but some of them were for crucial first downs. So, you know, you can do those screen passes with him. He's great. You know, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but I think he has sneaky speed. You know, people don't expect him to take off, but when he does, he can really, you know, he can outrun some guys.
For sure, for sure. You know, he had the big 47-yard run and might have found the end zone if, you know, Brandon Banks could, you know, maybe if he was a little bigger and could have made a better block. But, you know, you're not – again, I could go on and on and on and be effusive in my praise of C.J. Gable. But we should move on, because this will just become the C.J. Gable show if you let me go. As good as Gable was in the run, how about that run defense for Hamilton?
Yeah, doing it again. I mean, I said in the preview last week, if we could – hold Messam and Allen to under 100 yards, that'd be a big accomplishment, and they did that. I think they held them to under 60 yards. So
it was 60 exactly.
Okay, yep. So that's great.
They Messam was a complete non-factor. They barely used him.
I know. I didn't understand that.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
But again, this Ticats, if you're a team that runs the football in the CFL, you better come with a better passing attack against Hamilton, because this is the second week in a row that they've taken one of the league's best rushers and made them completely invisible. Last week it was Terrell Sutton. Even though they lost the game, he did next to nothing. Almost literally did nothing.
Yeah.
And this week it was, you know, the two-headed monster in Saskatchewan, which had been running roughshod over everybody. And the Ticats just were, ain't going to happen. And, you know, like, that's how you win football games, by on defense taking whatever the opposition does well and taking it away. And then, you know, it forced them to pass. And then when Glenn got hurt, it was pretty much game over as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, if you're going to beat the Ticats, you're going to have to do it through the air. You're not going to do it on the ground. What else we got here? You know, the one criticism, the penalties in the red zone need to stop.
Yeah, right? I have penalties written down here too, so we were going to touch on this at some point. You're right.
Yeah, you know, that penalty that Banks took was pretty dumb. We have a question later on about it, so I won't get into it too much, but that was just so unnecessary.
Yeah, it's, I believe whoever was a sideline reporter for the game reported that he overheard Kent Austin saying to Brandon Banks after, he goes, "You do that on the 5-yard line?"
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those things where, you know, Brandon Banks is not known for being a selfish player or a hothead. He's not known for doing things like that. So, again, you know, he kind of gets the benefit of the doubt. Like you said, we have a question later on about it, so we'll get into it there. But the penalties in general just have to stop. There's so many of these undisciplined, you know, preventable penalties. Like, they took 6 offsides on defense. And a couple of them looked like they were just lined up offside. Like, once, you know, you can kind of sort of, okay, you know, that can happen, especially on like a short yardage play. But they happened like three times on one drive, and that's inexcusable.
Yeah, you can't have that. If you know, it's tough to win when you have all those stupid penalties.
Yeah, and the fact that they are winning despite being the, on average, most penalized team in the league, it's, you know, it's hard to, you know, go with penalties and yardage because, you know, some teams have played five games and some teams have played four. But on average, the Ticats get over 15 flags a game, which is the most in the league. And, you know, if they keep doing that against these better teams that they're going to be seeing in the East, they might find themselves in trouble.
Yeah. But if it comes down, I mean, you know, we got a pretty good team. If we can get those penalties down, we might, it will be a force to be reckoned with, I'd say.
Yeah, we're being a little bit negative here when we should, you know, we should be positive. But, you know, even in victories, there's things you don't like. They held Saskatchewan to their lowest point total of the season. And, you know, the Riders' offense had been, you know, a juggernaut going in. So the defense, well, I won't say the defense won this game, but the defense, you know, did themselves a pretty good job.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rico Murray had that big pick, which I thought he was going to take back to the end zone. He just came up short. But, you know, and all game long, the blitzes were making Glenn uncomfortable, you could tell.
Oh, my God. He got just beaten. Did he not?
Yeah, he did. And Hickman was, you know, bringing the heat all game long, which was nice to see. He was really, you know, pressuring Glenn, and he got a couple good hits on him. And so did Lawrence, got a really big hit on Glenn. So he was shooken up. I take him out of the game. And like you said, with the backup quarterback coming in, it was pretty much game over.
Yeah, and like I sort of, you know, I always watch these games with a little bit of angst and, you know, just because it's the Ticats. Until they start putting together 3, 4, 5, 6 wins in a row and get to that, like, you know, 7-3 or 8-4 record, you know what I mean? Until they start showing that they are not just going to be, you know, 1 week win, 1 week loss, as they've been so far this season, you know, loss, win, there's always going to be a part of me that's worried that things are going to go poorly, that somehow they're going to trip over themselves and lose the game. But I sort of started feeling a little bit at ease when Smith came in the game at quarterback, especially on the screen pass. They set up a screen pass. I guess it was in the fourth quarter because Glenn got hurt on the last play of the third quarter. So in the fourth quarter, they set up a screen pass and it wasn't there. And instead of him throwing it away like a veteran quarterback would do, he tried to make a play and took a sack. I think it was Emmanuel Davis got the sack. Seeing that, it was like, okay, this kid's, you know, in over his head a little bit. I think I can, you know, breathe a sigh of relief. And I think the Cats were still losing at that point. I think, you know, Saskatchewan was still up. But it sort of felt, I was more calm and thinking, okay, the Cats are just going to march down here. They're going to win this game. I didn't really have any sort of, you know, heart palpitations after sort of that point.
Yeah, I'm sick of the win-loss too. I'm sick of being 9-9. You know, I want the Ticats to be, you know, 11-7 or 12-6 when season ends. So
yeah, well, they got their chance now.
Yeah,
they got these. They got 5 home games in the next 6 weeks. They play 9 of their last 14 at home. So now's the chance for them, starting Monday, to go on a run. So, you know, before we hold on. There's a couple things I want to say. Then we'll start talking about next week. One thing, any Rider fans listening out there, anyone associated with the Riders at all, please do not start comparing yourselves to the 2011 BC Lions. Okay? This cannot happen. You are not the 2011 BC Lions. That was a team coached by one of the greatest to ever be on a CFL sideline. They had an all-star and possible Hall of Fame wide receiver gifted to them by Bob Obilovich and the Ticats and Arlan Bruce. They did not lose their first 4 home games. Just stop it. I'm not going to hear this. If I see people out there comparing this, I'm going to lose my mind. This Riders team is just not that team. They are not going to go on an 11-2 run or whatever to end this season and win the Grey Cup. It's not happening.
Oh, I think it is, Josh. I think it is.
I'm looking for anyone out there that wants to be the co-host of a award-nominated podcast. Please send your resumes to. No, this is like, come on, let's be real. They're not going on some magical run. And like, Corey Chamberlain is not Wally Buono.
No.
I don't care how many you know, Grey Cups he's been a part of. He's not – Wally Blondell's it might be the greatest coach to ever coach this game, so no. I'm not listening to this junk.
No, it's highly doubtful that that happens. So, you know, I think they might be, you know, I don't think they're going to beat Edmonton next week, so I think they'll be 0-6. And, you know, the thing about just going off topic a little bit this year, but right here, but, you know, Saskatchewan isn't horrific, you know. Like last year, the Red Blacks were, you know, really, really bad, but I think this year there's a lot of parity, and even the worst team isn't you know, terrible. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. I don't think Saskatchewan's bad. Their loss to Hamilton by 10 was their, you know, worst, quote-unquote, loss of the season. Yeah. They've been in every game. Now, there's always, like, you know, this is a zero-sum game. There's a winner and there's a loser. And Saskatchewan just happens to have been the loser in all five games they've played. They could have won probably four of those games. Three, if we're being, you know, like that three-point loss to BC and Saskatchewan. BC kind of had that one in hand, and Saskatchewan got it close really late. But this team could be 3-2. However, they're not 3-2, and yeah, you're right. They're not that bad, but they're 0-5, and, you know, I believe it was Bill Parcells who, you know, famously said, "You are what your record says you are." So
yeah,
the inverse of this is kind of Calgary, where I haven't been impressed with Calgary either, like we talked about earlier, but they sort of have, up until this game against Ottawa this week, had found a way to win these close games. Saskatchewan's just finding a way to lose them. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Enough about them.
Yeah. So before we move on, we got to, you know, touch on our bold predictions, unless you have anything else you'd like to sort of get off your chest about this big win.
I liked, you know, Collins made a pretty good first impression. And there were
very first catch ever.
Yeah.
Takes it for like a 50-yard touchdown. So, yeah, I'd say it's a pretty darn good first impression.
What do you think about them taking out Sinkfield and Underwood? You
know, well, apparently it was for performance-ish reasons. I've heard, you know, I've read that, you know, the team wasn't exactly enamored with the play of those two, while at the same time heard that, you know, Austin kind of just wants to get a look at some of the other guys before they really get into the meat of the season and everyone starts getting back healthy. I hadn't been unimpressed with Sinkfield or Underwood.
No, I thought Sinkfield had a couple of really good games, actually.
Yeah, and, like, Underwood was out there playing the wide side receiver position, which we know doesn't get a much – like, that doesn't – you know, Sam Giguere played that here for 3 years and didn't really see a ton of action, so it's kind of hard to, you know, judge him based on stats. I wasn't overly impressed with McDuffie, who came in for him, so I think maybe, you know, that was his sort of one shot. And, you know, with Luke Tasker on the mend and possibly playing this week against Toronto – I can imagine, you know, maybe one of those guys, you know, doesn't see the field. But I liked what Underwood and Sinkfield did. But you're right. Collins played well. And I don't know. At the time, I wasn't too, you know, in favor of making the switch. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a podcaster. I'm not a head coach.
Yeah. It should be interesting to see if Sinkfield gets switched back in with McDuffie not doing much in the game. So.
Yeah, sort of get that second returner back there. And
Yeah. I just wanted to touch on Fantuz as well. You know, he was quiet the whole game, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter when it mattered the most, he caught fire.
Yeah. You know, I joked on Twitter that he's got a new lame nickname, Automatic Andy. He has never really played well when they visited Saskatchewan, so when he didn't have any catches for, like, the first 2.5 to 3 quarters, it was like, oh, geez. Like, especially because I got him on my fantasy team and could have used the points. but anyway, yeah, it was, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, they find him when they need him. And, you know, it's nice to see a guy, you know, usually hear about receivers, they want to get, you know, a couple catches early to get into the flow of the game. It was nice to sort of see, you know, Fantuz not be a focal point, and yet still when the team needed him, they were able to find him.
Yeah. It's good to see him come through in crunch time. So,
well, it's just nice to have him healthy. Like,
yeah.
He's not getting banged up. He's, you know, there's absolutely no talk of him missing practices or any possibility of him missing games. And if he plays, you know, 18 games this year, he's going to be probably, you know, no, I'm not even gonna, you know, I'm gonna say, yeah, he will be the best Canadian receiver in the CFL. So. You know, when you have that sort of player out there, it just makes the team better. Like with the return of CJ Gable, it makes the team better. This team is talented. There's a lot of talent on this team, and the healthier they are, the better they're going to be. And like to go 2-2 on this road trip with all these injuries and everything, I'm impressed. And I think this team can and will go on a run. And, you know, you want those 11, 12 wins. I think they're going to get them.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I thought it was just one last thing. I thought it was a good bounce back game for Claros after that, after the rough go last week.
Yeah, the clunker in Montreal.
Yeah, it was good to see him, you know, more comfortable in the pocket and making his throws. Yeah, you know, it wasn't a perfect game, but a very good performance from Claros.
Yeah, you know, didn't make any, you know, bad plays.
No interceptions.
No interceptions, no fumbles. Maybe one sack, maybe, I think. Yeah.
You know, he used his legs a bit, too. I think he had, three carries for 30 yards or something. So
yeah, and he needed to because that Saskatchewan defense we saw the week before was susceptible to those zone read option plays, and the Ticats didn't do it a ton, but we know they did it, and Gable was able to, you know, bust off a few big runs, and like you said, Claros used his feet and got a few big runs, so they saw the tape and executed that to maybe not perfection, but they did a darn good job.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if Claros is running, that adds another dimension, that another thing that the defense has to worry about, you know. Is Claros going to take off? Are they going to hand off the ball to Gable? Is he going to pass the ball? You know, so it's nice to see him take off when he has the chance. And, yeah, about 10 yards to carry. So, you know, there's three more first downs.
Extending drives, that's what he's there for. He's a playmaker, a quarterback. So
yeah,
whether he's throwing the ball or running the ball, he's a threat either way.
Yep, and I think that's about it about that one.
All right, so our bold predictions were once again both wrong.
I was kind of close.
You were. I will give it to you. You nailed one-third of your predictions. You had Gable going over 100 rush yards, 50 receiving yards, and 2 TDs. He definitely went over 100 rush yards. He came close to 50 yards. I believe he had, 39 yards receiving?
Something like that.
He did not score one touchdown, let alone two. So another incorrect pick on yours. But a lot closer than mine because I had 3 Ticat receivers going over 80 yards and a touchdown. And no receiver on the Ticats had 80 yards receiving. And the only receiving touchdown was to a guy who, when we recorded last week, I didn't even know was going to be playing in the game. So that was a big whiff on my part. But last week was last week. And now it's finally time. I'm finally going to get to sit live in the stadium and watch a game. The Ticats are finally going to open Tim Hortons Field in 2015. The Pan Am games are done. That's it. This is their home now. They are in the friendly confines of Tim Hortons Field where they are. Last I checked, if you want to go, what are they, 7-0 at home now? 8-0 if you count the preseason game. 7-0 at home.
Yep, I believe so.
So, we get the Argos coming in. A battle for first place. Holiday Monday, a late start. That building is going to be rocking. It's going to be loud there. I believe I saw yesterday there are less than 700 tickets available for the game. So, Michael, offensively, what do you think this team needs to do to get their second consecutive win and get a share of first place in East Division?
Well, it comes back to Gable. I mean, you know, run the ball with Gable, give him that extra dimension to the offense. You know, he's got to be a big part of this game to get the win from the Argonauts. So got to use Gable. I got to want to see Claros, you know, put together two games where he's consistent. You know, it'd be nice not to have any interceptions from him. You know, the offensive line's has to have a great game. They have to protect Claros. You know, Toronto has a lot of talent on that D line, so they have to give Claros a lot of time in the pocket.
Well, you pretty much just said everything I was going to say. The one thing I'll add is I think they need to take some shots deep and maybe take them early. They have some guys that can stretch the field. Brandon Banks, when he's inserted in on offense, can make plays. Terrence Tolliver has become a really reliable receiving target. We didn't get into his play in the Riders game, but he caught a pass over the middle and got lit up by Tyron Brackenridge and bounced right off it and ran downfield for another, you know, 8 to 12 yards or whatever it was. It was a nice little catch and run by him, and he's been really impressive so far in his rookie season. So take some shots deep, because that will open up the middle of the field for guys like Fantuz, you know, Bakari Grant, and as we, you know, sort of alluded to earlier, the possible return of Luke Tasker this week. If the Cats get him back, that's another guy across the middle who, you know, makes all the catches and, you know, makes guys miss. So, like I said, take those deep shots, and then hopefully, you know, with Gable running the football, because, like, I agree, you got to feed that beast. I love CJ Gable. Just want to say that again. You got to feed him, and then everything, it sort of opens everything else up for all these other skilled players. So, keep Caleros. I liked everything you said, and yeah, I'll just add that use the deep ball to your advantage this week.
Yeah, it should be a better test for the running game this week with Toronto's, you know, front seven. They have a good set of linebackers back there too. So,
and a really, really good, you know, defensive line.
Yes.
They've been, you know, Euclid Cummings, I think, is the guy's name. He's been pretty impressive so far this season.
Yeah, and they had Okapalugo, which, you know, he hasn't had the numbers that he had last year. You know, I think he had 12 sacks. I don't think he has any sacks so far this year. But, and they got Ricky Foley, who's, you know, a vet, and he can do some damage. So, yeah, it'll be a bigger test this week against Toronto's front seven than it was last week against Saskatchewan's. So,
for sure.
Should be interesting.
Defensively, my big thing is it's what they've done all season. Blitz, blitz, blitz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make Trevor Harris uncomfortable. This will only be his, what, sixth career start, I believe. So, you know, I know he's looked impressive, but if there's any defense out there that can rattle a young quarterback, it's the Ticats defense.
Yeah, you know that Steinhauer is going to be bringing the blitz and the bits. And, you know, Norwood might be back. You know, Ted Laron was out last week, so he's a force in the middle. And, you know, just make him uncomfortable. Harris has shown that he will, you know, he's had a great year so far, but he does throw a couple interceptions here and there. So, yeah, so make him uncomfortable. You know, take Whitaker out of the game if you can, which we should be able to do with our run defense. And I'd like to see the crowd just make a lot of noise, you know, make it hard for them to, you know, change the play on the line and make it hard for the offense to function.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have to worry about crowd noise. I think that place, you know, it's a, I'm not sure, is it a holiday Monday out there in PEI?
Yeah, I think it's coast to coast holidays. So.
Yeah, like I know it's not a federal holiday, and I know some provinces don't have it, but yeah, it's a holiday Monday here.
What's it called? Is it called Family Day there?
It's the civic holiday.
Oh, okay.
In some places, it's called Simcoe Day. Like in Toronto, it's called Simcoe Day after, you know, John Graves Simcoe. There's a lot of history involved. This is not a history podcast. People don't want to hear me go on about my other love, which is Canadian history. I'm pretty big, you know, history nerd. So, but we won't get into that. Yeah, it's called differently. It's just the civic holiday. It's like a provincial holiday. It doesn't have to be a day off, but everyone I know has the day off. So, you know, you're probably gonna have people down there at, you know, Scott Park tailgating at like 8 in the morning, so people are going to be, you know, riled up and ready to go. And it's the Argos, so it's always loud when the Argos are in town. What
a great way to have the home opener against the Argos, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to, you know, the Argos do a lot of checkdowns in their offense, so, you know, if you can limit the checkdowns, you know, make them do the checkdowns, but then make the quick tackle and limit the first downs. That'd be huge for the defense.
Wow, we're of the same mind on that one, because I have written down here limit yak of Owens, yep. Coombs, and Whitaker. Those are sort of their three, you know, get it to them in space and let them make a move and go. Like you said, they're going to probably be able to limit Whitaker rushing the ball just because they limit everyone rushing the ball. But yeah, they got to eliminate those, like you said, limit those, make them take the checkdowns, but then do what this defense does and just wrap them up.
Yeah, I agree.
One more thing. I think they got to be physical defensively with those big receivers, those three rookies we were talking about that Toronto has. Mm-hmm. Get in their faces on the line of scrimmage, bang them around, get them frustrated. The thing I've noticed about them, less with Gurley than with Elliott and Hazelnut, is that if you can sort of get in their heads, they get off their game and take some stupid penalties. So get Brandon Stewart up in, you know, Hazleton's face and just bang them off the line and sort of push them off their mental game and see if you can sort of, you know, get them frustrated and sort of take advantage.
Yeah, I'm just talking about this game, looking forward to it so much, you know.
Get the blood pumping, isn't it?
Yeah, battle for first place, you know, if Hamilton wins, they'll be tied with the Argos, so.
And the Red Blacks, we can't forget
them. Yeah, the Red Blacks, yep.
They're going to buy this week, they're going to be 3-2 as well.
I'm impressed with the East so far, you know, they all seem to be playing pretty well.
It's entirely possible that the entire East Division will be 3-2 after this week, so.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a flipping the script from, like, you know, the last, like, 4 decades of football where, you know, the West has been great and the East has been terrible.
Yeah, East is beast.
Indeed. Anything else defensively you're looking at? Or?
Well, I think I pretty much covered it all.
All right. So let's get into some bold predictions. Like I usually pick two, like I said last week. This week, I don't think you're going to come anywhere close to mine, so I don't have a problem saying mine first, if you won't mind.
Okay, go for it.
I think mine's pretty bold.
All right.
So I am saying that the Tiger Cats defense will hold the Argos offense to under 250 total yards and under 20 points. Mm-hmm. Now, for a little perspective, the Argos average 365.3 yards per game and 29.5 points per game so far this season. So, I'm saying that Ticat defense is going to come out and just limit the Argos to almost next to nothing. I nearly said that they were going to shut them out. That's what I wanted my bold prediction to be, but getting a shutout in the CFL is next to impossible.
Yeah.
So I went with what I thought was the next best thing.
Yeah, that's pretty bold. I like the sounds of that one.
If that happens, you know the Ticats win the game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now I got, if Norwood returns, I'm going with the... 3 sacks from Norwood and a forced fumble. So,
wow, okay.
That's pretty bold, I thought.
That is pretty bold, especially if, you know, after that, being out for, you know, 4 games and...
Yep. You know,
three sacks is a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. So if he gets that, I'll be pretty shocked, but I'm going with that.
And you have a forced fumble as well.
Forced fumble, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Cosmo Kramer going up to, what the heck was his name on that episode of Seinfeld? He went up to him and said, I told this kid you're going to hit.
Oh, yeah.
Paul O'Neill.
Paul O'Neill, yeah.
You're going to hit 2 home runs. 2? Why'd you tell him 2?
Yeah.
You're going to get 3 sacks. 3? Why'd you pick 3? 2 would have been fine, but yeah.
It's the inside the park home run. And
It gets labeled as a triple, so yeah. What a great episode.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, maybe we'll start a Seinfeld podcast one day, even though the show's been off the air for like almost 20 years.
Did you ever get into Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yes. Got into it the second it came out. Larry David's like... Anyway, we're getting off topic here, but I love Larry David. Not as much as I love CJ Gable, though.
Yeah, no, not that much.
All right, so bold predictions out of the way. Obviously, we both think the Ticats are going to win and hopefully stomp a mud hole in the Argos' ass and walk it dry.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to the ending of the show like we always do, and let's throw out some Twitter questions. You got them there, Mikey?
Yeah, yes, I do. I got one from TXA2002. If you had to be shipwrecked on an island with one CFL player and one TSN personality, who would they be and why?
Do you want to answer this one first, or do you want me to go first?
I'm going to go Diakowski, because I think he's a funny guy. And Dunnigan, because I would like to have some beers with him, you know, if we had beers on this island.
That's okay. You know what's funny? Diakowski's my player, too. Not only because he's funny, but like I feel like he could sort of like take a coconut and a tree branch and like, you know, some sand and figure out a way to like make a radio or something. You know what I mean? Like
he's a smart dude.
He's a smart dude. So he's very he'd be very helpful. I went a little bit off the board with the TSN personality because it didn't specify that it had to be a CFL and TSN personality.
Mm.
And I kind of picked this person because I know this is going to get a response from you probably in the negative. But I'm taking Kate Burness.
Oh, boy.
Now, for people out there who listen that don't know, Mike does not like her. I don't know why. Do you want to tell people like what the reasoning is, if you don't mind?
I don't... It's I think it's the, you know, I don't want to be too mean, you know.
Yeah, 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 I know.
I think it's the voice and just the her just the way she she uses her hands like she's lost at sea and she's trying to like wave down yep, you know, trying to wave down a ship to be saved, you know, it's
that
too
would
much.
Be helpful for shipwrecked.
Yeah, I know, but it's too much, man. It's too much. She just bugs me. I don't. She just annoys me. That's all.
Okay. I've liked her for a long time, and perhaps I this is all in my imagination. But a few years ago, I went to go see the Ticats play in Montreal, and there were other CFL games that week, obviously. So I was at the hotel. I was staying out watching one of the games, and you know how sometimes during halftime they'll throw to a TSN anchor to do sort of a sports wrap up.
Yeah.
She was there, and I seem to recall her being her saying that she was a Ticats fan. And she was really new at this time. So this was like, I think it was like 2009 or 2010. Like, she had just gotten to TSN, and I was like, oh, this new girl likes the Ticats. Oh, that's, you know, that's pretty cool. You don't usually hear the announcers, with the exception of, like, Dutchie, who, you know, he's from Saskatchewan, so obviously he's a Riders fan,
yeah,
really mention, like, what teams they like. So she said then, I was like, oh, a Ticats fan. And again, I could be totally off on this, and this could have just been like some, you know, fever-induced hallucination dream. But I, ever since then, I've just been like, I like her. And then every time I see you or hear you, just like, I can't stand her. It always makes me laugh because it's like, well, she's a Ticats fan, Mike. You gotta like her.
I don't know, man.
So, but yeah. So anyway, back to the question. Yeah, I'm taking her because, like she said, I could talk Ticats football. She's knowledgeable about all sports. Could talk about sports. And if we're shipwrecked on a desert island, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have a female around, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true.
So what do we got next?
Okay, it comes from at Corey Hanatuk. I don't know. Maybe that's how you pronounce it.
Apologies for butchering your name if we did.
Yes, I apologize. People say Banks was being picked up and thrown down after a few plays, which was why he was so angry. Any truth? I'm sure he's talking about when he, you know, hit the defender at the goal line and got that penalty. So
yeah,
I don't know. I didn't see it, so I can't really answer that question. I didn't see that. So
yes. You
know, he seemed to be pretty mad, so there must have been something.
Yeah, same here. I when I saw this question, I, you know, was hoping to be able to go back and watch the game, but I didn't. Obviously, didn't get a chance to. I went on the forums to sort of see like where this, you know, sentiment was coming from, and there were a few people who had said like, oh, they had noticed that he was being tackled and picked up and dropped again. Again, like you, I didn't see it. Mm. But also, like you said, you know, he was pretty pissed off, and he's not really known to, you know, let his emotions get the best of him. Well, I guess he kind of did in the Grey Cup after the penalty, but he's not like we said earlier, he's not a selfish player. He doesn't sort of never really had this problem before, so I'm sure something must have happened for him to sort of get that angry. But no, I didn't really see anything. Maybe if I get a chance to go back and watch the game, we can revisit this maybe next week or, you know, somewhere down the line. I'll keep this sort of in the back of my mind, and we'll be able to find some sort of idea as to where this sentiment from Ticat fans is coming from. Because, like, yeah, I didn't really see anything. So
yeah.
I won't say that there's no truth to it, but I can't really answer it because I don't know.
Yes. Do you have the last one from Joe?
I actually got two here.
Okay.
You want to do the one from Joe first, I guess?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so our, you know, fantasy league mate and a gentleman that I will be meeting face-to-face. He's coming up here for the Hamilton-Winnipeg game in a couple of weeks, and we're going to hook up for maybe a beer and a nice little chat. Seems like a good dude, and I'm looking forward to it. So, anyway, he sent in, what kind of team is Montreal anyway? Beating Hamilton and Calgary and losing to Winnipeg and Ottawa. Hashtag confused.
Hmm. Well, I think I've always thought that, you know, coming into the season, I thought that they had a great team put together. You know, the only question mark was quarterback. So, you know, Cato, he's had a couple games, you know, you're not, you know, positive if he's for real or not, but if they do have that quarterback, if Cato is the guy that he looks like he has been in the last couple games, then I think that Montreal's for real, and I think they're a threat in the East.
Yeah, like, let's look at the loss to Ottawa for one. they lose two quarterbacks in the first half of that game and are forced to go the rest of the way with a rookie who played okay, but by the following week was relegated to the backup job, and the guy who was behind him was inserted as the starter. So it was a 4-point loss at home. You know, fluky things can happen in week one. We see things that, you know, we look back on at the end of the season and go, like, how the hell did that happen? I remember, you know, the year Hamilton, 2009, the year Hamilton, you know, sort of, you know, resurrected themselves from the doldrums of, you know, 4-14 records. They lost their home opener by like 2 touchdowns to the Argos, who that season went on to win just 3 games. So,
is that the Bart Andrews year?
That would be the Count Chocula year, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, weird things happen. And I, you know, Crompton looked terrible in that game. I think he was something like 5 for 17 or something ridiculous like that, and just could get nothing going. So that loss is a bit of a, I don't know, it's hard to sort of like quantify how they lost. They just did. And, you know, things like that happen. If Cato plays, or if Cato's the starter going in the season, maybe they don't lose that game. It's hard to say. We can't say for certain because, you know, what happened. And Winnipeg just seems to be a place where Montreal doesn't play well. Like, they've lost something like 4 or 5 in a row in Winnipeg. And, like, Winnipeg has a hard enough time winning at home. Like, we talked about this when Hamilton beat them. Hamilton had as many wins after that game in week two in Winnipeg as Winnipeg had at their new stadium. So, you know, sometimes certain teams just have other teams' numbers. And, like, that just happens to be the case. When Montreal goes into Winnipeg, and Winnipeg just finds a way to win.
Yeah. I'm not sure who Montreal's playing this week, but it should be interesting to see how they come back after a bye week.
They are in Calgary.
Ooh.
So, and again, well, you know what? And to touch on their wins, like, Hamilton hasn't won in Montreal since 2002.
Mm.
And Calgary, you know, as great as they were last year, one of their big brain fart losses was they got mollywopped by Montreal.
Mollywopped.
Oh, it's a great word. Love it.
I like that.
Yeah, they got hammered by Montreal. And yeah, I think in that game, it was mentioned they were missing Cornish and Mitchell. But yeah, they got just demolished in Montreal when they were like just going on that giant run they had there last year. So I don't know. Maybe it's just so happens that Montreal's been, in the teams they've won, they've been fortunate with the teams they've played. And the games they've lost, it was either, you know, brain fart game and, you know, just some place where they just seem to be hexed.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, I think they're a good team with a lot of talent. They got a lot of veteran talent, so I think they're for real. But we shall see as the weeks go on here.
Yeah, they're a 2-2 team, and you know, I think if we went back and listened to our season preview show, we probably both had them pegged at around a, you know, a 9-9 team. Mm. So they're pretty much on pace for what we expected, and they're going to have their ups and they're going to have their downs, like you said, veteran team, but rookie quarterback. So they're a very frustrating team if you're a fan because, like, just like the Ticats, win one, lose one, win, you know, sort of thing. So
yeah,
I don't really think they have too much to worry about if you're a fan of the Alouettes.
No.
So one last question. This actually came as a comment to last week's show. I'm assuming it came from my comparison of Chad Owens to DC comic villain Mr. Mixoplex, and I mentioned how I just, you know, he's an annoying gnat of a human being and blah, 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 blah. So Brian Broom, who is one of the, like, most positive guys you'll ever, you know, see on Twitter, he just had the simple question, why the hate for CO? Do you want me to go first, or would you like to? I'll go?
You go.
Okay, so there's a couple of reasons. The biggest is I just think that the media and Argos fans overrate his importance to the team and where he lies in sort of the pantheon of all-time greats. The year he won MOP, he had, like, the most combined yards of any player in CFL history, and sure, that's a record worthy of, you know, mentioning, but something like 1,400 yards came on, like, kickoff returns, and I just do not like when fans use kickoff return yards as a metric of success. All having a bunch of kickoff return yards means is that your team give up a bunch of touchdowns or a bunch of points. Like, you will field one kickoff per game that is completely independent of any scoring, and that's either the one to open the game or the one to open the second half. So for Chad Owens to have all those yards on kickoffs is mean. It just shows that the Argos weren't very good. And the other thing that really bothers me, and it sort of, you know, solidified itself when I went to the Grey Cup in Toronto, he's a camera whore. He's always looking for the camera to get his face on TV. And in that game, the Argos offense was announced, and he was one of the last players. I think he might have been the second to last. I think it was him and then Ray. And he comes barreling out of the tunnel, you know, being all Chad Owensy. And then he ran back into, like, he comes out, they announce him, he does, turns around, runs back into the tunnel so they can run out with the rest of the defense. And I'm watching this going, he only wanted to do that so he could get his face on TV twice.
Yeah.
And this doesn't even mention the fact that he, you know, he's constantly whining when he's on the field. My favorite thing in the world, and I think we've mentioned this before, is when he gets tackled and will, like, pound the ball on the ground. And it always comes off as, like, how dare I get tackled? I'm Chad Owens, the greatest player to ever exist. And something that happened this week, Brandon Banks had that great punt return, and the punter got him, like, tackled him and forced him out of bounds. And you saw Banks get up and slam the ball in his hands, but then they sort of zoomed in on his face, and he had this giant smile on his face, and he was getting tapped by, because it happened on the Riders' sidelines, he was kind of getting tapped by the Riders' players. So, you know, he was taking a bit of a chiding from, you know, you got tackled by the punter. But he seemed to take it in, like in stride, and he wasn't angry about it, more like, oh, I got tackled by the punter, and, like, was laughing about it. Whereas Owens, anytime, you know, someone dares to trip him up and he doesn't take it to the house, he slams the ball and just acts like a whiny little bitch. And I just don't like the guy. He comes off to me as someone who's very disingenuous. And yeah, there's probably no player in the league I dislike more than Chad Owens.
Yeah, I don't think I hate him as much as you do.
It's pretty hard to hate him as much as I do, because yeah. I just can't stand him.
But yeah, I agree with the whininess and the, you know, he's a whore, and you know, I think he just, you know, he has, you know, it's not the hatred, you know, I don't have the hate, you know, the what I'm going to say here, you know, I just think that, you know, I've heard interviews with him, and I think he just has the personality of a wet carrot, so, you know, I don't, yeah, I'm not a huge fan either, but I don't have as much hate as you do.
Yeah, I can't think of a player in the history of the CFL that I've disliked more than Chad Owens, to be perfectly honest. And I know we're sort of like, you know, it's a recency bias maybe, because, like, I can just think of guys that play now. But even when, like, Mike O'Shea was pretty well, you know, arch villain number one in Hamilton. And even then, I didn't, you know, I'd boo him when I'd go to games because that's just what you did, sort of thing.
Yeah. Never threw batteries at him?
No, I never threw batteries at him. I never spit on him or threw piss on him or anything like that. But with Owens, it's just like, and maybe it all just stems from the fact that I think he's an overrated player. I think people just talk about him as being one of these all-time greats at, you know, kick returns and punt returns. He was a middling to average player until Ricky Ray got there, and then he wins MOP, and let's be honest, it was all because of Ray. He went a whole season without catching a touchdown pass as a receiver, as a number one receiver in a CFL offense. I don't care if it was Steven Giles and Cleo Lemon throwing you the ball. You don't get into the end zone on offense, you're not very good. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, that's, we're done with Owens.
There you go, Brian. That's the reason.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, God. Now my blood's, I can't wait to see him come across the middle this week and have Salmoni Lawrence just light him up.
Yeah.
Maybe my bold prediction should have been that he fumbles, although I guess that's not really a bold prediction considering he fumbles most weeks.
Yeah, he's got slippery fingers.
Oh, God, I hope he has, like, zero catches this week and we can just rip into him next week on the show.
Yeah.
God, now I'm pumped. I can't wait till next Monday.
Oh. I wish he was on the weekend and not on Monday, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm probably going to need a little time to calm down because, yeah, I'm fired up right now.
Yep.
Goddamn Chad Owens. So that's it then, eh?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, let me try to get through this outro without cursing or being angry again. But anyway, don't forget that you can subscribe to our, I guess we should call it the award-nominated podcast, seeing as we're up for the CFL Twitter Awards, although I guess every podcast could say they're award-nominated because they're all nominated for the award. We didn't really talk about it this week, but I think I'm going to try to put something together for next week's show in the hopes of maybe having a little fun with this. I'll send you what I've sort of come up with, and we'll discuss it off mic, if you don't mind. Let's keep things a little bit of a secret. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so if you want to have your questions answered by myself or Mike, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, give them your Twitter handle as always.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am at JoshSmith_82. It doesn't happen often, but you can also post a question in the comments section of 3DownNation, which is still going strong. Lots of great content on there, whether you're a Ticats fan or just a fan of the league. Just a one-stop shop for all your CFL news and analysis. So that's it for this week of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.